Good evening, everybody. We're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back with you here tonight on Wednesday. And there's a lot to talk about, lots to get into. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus, of course, naturally. And before we get into any of that, though, I do just want to address the elephant in the room here. You have learned, and I have learned probably around the same time, that there are no lemons tonight on the show, no super chats. Apparently, DLive is undergoing maintenance. And here's the beauty. They're undergoing site-wide maintenance because they're changing up how the money works. And so the maintenance, what they're putting into place, is actually a higher fee for the lemons. So if that wasn't good enough, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, they're now raising their fee, raising the cut that DLive takes out of every super chat, out of every lemon, from 10 to 25%. So this is why the site maintenance is occurring. This is why the lemons are down. So it's not enough, right? It's not enough that they're going to take 15% more lemons, or however, whatever the percentage is, however many more lemons out of every Ninjagini or every diamond that you give me. But they also put the entire site under maintenance at 5 or 6 o'clock today. And don't tell anybody, and now no lemons on the stream tonight. So I saw some people freaking out in the live chat saying, why are there no lemons? No lemons tonight? What's going on? And it's because the site is undergoing maintenance so they can raise the fee. And so for tonight's show, I guess no super chats. I honestly have no idea. They didn't tell me anything. Would have been nice. You know, I understand if you have to put a major site like this under maintenance and some features are unavailable, but send me an email, send me an email, send me a DM, put something on Twitter, or put something anywhere. I had no idea there was site maintenance. And by the way, if Jaden or Patrick hadn't told me about some of the other changes that were being made, I probably would not even know about the raising of the fee or the fact that you have to log into your Lino account and pull out, some of you may know how this works, pull out some extra money. So it's just been a real pain in the ass with this website. You know, I understand small platform. Like I said, I understand small platform, a lot going on, and maybe they have to shut down some features to do their maintenance. I get it. Or they have to implement new features, whatever. But where's the communication? I have no idea. I find out when I start the stream that there's no lemons, really? Anyway, so tonight's going to be a free show. Tonight's going to be a free show. No super chats, which is bittersweet for me. On the one hand, no lemons means I'm not getting paid, so it's a freebie, free show. On the other hand, it means no super chats. No cringe comments, no cringe jokes, no comedians wanting to do my job in the chat. So it's going to be a shorter show tonight. I think this is the first time we've ever not had super chats, right? This is the first show. What are we up to now? 586? Yeah, this is the first in 586 episodes that we've gone live with no super chats. It's never happened on YouTube. We've been on DLive now for nearly 2 months exactly, and here we are. No lemons. That's okay. That's okay. I don't ever want to hear again that I'm in it for the money after tonight. I do one free show. I don't ever want to hear again people say, he's a grifter. He's in it for the money. I don't ever want to hear that again after tonight. You're getting a free show. Most of you get a free show as it is. I'm not getting super chats from 6,000 people every night. So most of you, it's really hardly any different. But that's a joke, of course. But it's not a joke. It's completely factual. But I'm saying it in a joking way. But we've got a great show. Nevertheless, super chats, no super chats. It makes no difference. We're not here for that. We're here for the content. We're here for the takes, the comedy. We're here for the, I thought that was something. Getting a notification on my phone. I'm keeping an eye out on my phone to see if, DLive is going to hit me up and, you know, waiting for them to tell me about the situation. Number one streamer on DLive, no courtesy, no consideration. I'm your king. I am the king of DLive. Where is my squire? Where is the squire? We need a DLive squire to run into my studio. King! King! Lemons are down. Shut down the stream. No, don't start the stream. Lemons are down. Where is my sire? Where is my royal staff? I am the king of D-Live. Number one by far. Check the social blade. Check the social blade. Around these parts, we like to let the social blade do the talking. So why don't you just take a look at the social blade? And where's my email? Where's my notification? Nothing. I would have liked to know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We still have a great show. The king of D-Live, he's here for the streams, not for the money. We still have a good show. We're going to be talking about coronavirus. Epic. Our big story tonight is about the origin of the coronavirus, and I know annoyingly a lot of people are going to say, duh, we've known this forever, but it may have just been confirmed that the coronavirus came from a government laboratory in Wuhan in China. And I know we've been talking about this theory since January, actually, since the virus started in China, or since it was first reported, I should say, in China. We have been talking about the idea that it is likely or probable or maybe much more likely that the virus originated from a laboratory and probably a government laboratory for whatever purposes, whether that's bioweapons or something else. It's much more likely that that is the source than a wet market or anything like that. And the evidence has been piling up since January. Initially, it was just speculation. And then it was circumstantial evidence. And then we found out, I think it was a recent development, they figured out the species of bat that the virus came from. And I saw this on Tucker Carlson. People looked into it, and there was a report that found that you didn't see that particular species of bat anywhere near the city of Wuhan. It would be almost impossible for a bat like that to show up at a wet market in Wuhan. And moreover, at that particular market, it's confirmed that they didn't sell that kind of bat. So if they trace the virus back to a particular species of bat, and the Chinese government is telling us it came from a wet market in a particular city, and we know that that bat isn't found anywhere near the city and was not sold at that particular wet market, obviously there must be another source. Obviously that was not the original source. Patient Zero did not contract the virus from this wet market. It came from somewhere else. And people have been pointing out since January that inside the city of Wuhan, you have a very advanced virology laboratory. I think it's called the Wuhan Institute of Virology, inside the city. And that is one of the only laboratories in China which has a security clearance that they could handle that family of coronavirus or families of coronavirus. And so we had this evidence going back. Some evidence was early, some was later. But now, and this is our development today, we may have finally confirmed from our own government that this is the source. And I know we speculated all along, and I think a lot of us probably knew, more likely than not, that this was the case. But now we finally have confirmation. So we'll talk about that report. We'll be talking about a new fund that has been created in California. Have you heard about this? Well, a lot of people are getting their Trump bucks today from the federal government. People are getting their $1,200 checks, or they're getting their $600 unemployment benefits from the, or they're either getting employee compensation for small businesses. There's all kinds of compensation and cash payments that are going out from the federal government this week. But now in California, they're creating a new cash benefit, a new cash payment, but only for illegal immigrants. Get this. Gavin Newsom announced today that they're creating a $125 million fund for illegal immigrants to get cash payments, to get relief during this coronavirus pandemic. And we'll talk about that. I find that amazing. I don't know about you guys, but I haven't gotten my Trump bucks yet. I know some of you have, and I saw a lot of people on Twitter got their Trump bucks. I haven't gotten anything yet. And probably a lot of us will not get Trump bucks. I don't know if I'm going to get them. Probably most of you will not get Trump bucks. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. You know, I don't know what the demographics are actually of the audience. But rest assured, illegal immigrants will be getting a cash payment. So we can all rest easy knowing that. But those will be our two main stories. We'll be looking at that report on the origin of the virus. And we'll be looking at the illegal immigrant cash payment fund. And we'll also be talking about the numbers the latest numbers. Death rate, confirmed cases, death toll, all of that. And so it should be a pretty good show. Pretty good show talking about the virus. But it will be a show without lemons. It will be a show without Super Chats, sadly. A very depressing picture to see that 0.00 hanging over the video playback here on the screen. But that's okay. And I know, you know, what's going to be even better about this show is all the people that are going to pile into the live chat over the course of the night because they didn't tune in for the beginning of the show saying, "Hey, what the heck? Why can't I donate any lemons? Hey, what's going on? Why can't I donate any lemons?" So that will actually be, it really is the gift that keeps on giving in that sense, right? The fee is going up. And because the fee is going up, they have to shut the site down for maintenance. They shut the site down for maintenance, so I make no money tonight. And even better than that, you're going to have people pouring into the live chat throughout the night, annoyingly asking, "What's going on? Why are there no lemons?" So, but we're going to make the best of it. But as always, we're going to make the best of it. It's about the content. And I have to tell you, before we dive into our current events here, the latest, I am just, I don't know about you, but I am just savoring. I am savoring all of the dysfunction that is arising from this coronavirus pandemic for normies, wages, people that go to school as a NEET. It's a very proud moment. It's a very funny moment to me. I see multiple articles today on Twitter on their, what is it, trending or For You? For You is TikTok. On the trending page on Twitter, there's multiple articles in like the New York Times and in all the other big publications talking about how this coronavirus is devastating the population psychologically because we're not able to touch one another. All these tortured articles about human beings need touch. Human beings need social contact. Human beings need love. How are we going to survive in the coronavirus? And I just find it so funny because you know what all of that is about, right? I mean, you know what all these articles deep down are about. This is all just a major cope for coomers, essentially, because we all know that when it comes down to this kind of social stuff and whatever, you still are in your house with your family. Most people are. And in most cases, people still do see each other. And it's not like social functions and social engagement has disappeared altogether. And probably if you're a more traditional person or a traditional type family, you know, you're probably seeing a lot of your family. I still see my family, you know, and so on. And as long as you're careful, you're still able to talk to people. But we know that we hear all these tortured articles about love and touch and contact, and we're breaking down because primarily women, but also a lot of men, I think are really just self-destructing completely. Self-immolating, imploding, because they are not able to have casual sex. That's my theory. I'm going with that one. And I think I'm right about this, that, you know, when you look across the social landscape, the people that are hardest hit by the social distancing, the self-isolation, the quarantining, are people that make it a habit to regularly go out every weekend or every other weekend and get wasted, get drunk, and hook up with strangers and have casual sex with strangers. And those people are just devastated. I feel as though almost everybody else is basically fine. And it might be a little bit more tough. It might be an adjustment. And it might take some getting used to. But generally speaking, what exactly are you talking about with touch? When you go to work, are you really like touching your coworkers? You know what I'm saying? Human beings, that was one article. Let me see if I could find it. I'll pull it up on my Explore page. It keeps changing, but let me see if I can find it. Yeah, Los Angeles Times. Humans were meant to touch each other. What's the price of no contact? Like, do you think they're talking about work? You know, non-essential businesses being closed and you're forced to stay home. You're touching all your coworkers. Like, you know, you come into the office every day and you hug your boss and you're making out with your secretary. And well, maybe in some cases, but you know what I'm saying. Do you, like, get to your cubicle and you're, like, touching the person next to you's face? Of course not. And how about in school when you get to your classroom? Do you greet your teacher with a hug and a kiss and your fellow classmates? No, no. And generally speaking, I don't see people not hanging out with their friends or anything like that, but this touch and human needs affection and psychologically, what is this doing to us? I think it is really just crippling people who use that as maybe their only social outlet. It really, and I know this may be a trite take at this point, but it really just goes to show how bankrupt the society is socially. It shows how thin the social fabric has become. And I know that's not exactly an extremely novel or fresh take, but it's just true that the coronavirus exposes that beneath the surface, there is nothing in this country. Beneath the surface of constant amusements and distractions and self-medication, you have nothing. Our lives have no meaning. Our relationships have no meaning. The things that we participate in on a daily basis have no meaning. And I'm just talking generally. I'm sure a lot of you are not this way. I'm not this way. I'm feeling just fine. I'm completely content. But I think a lot of people, I think broadly speaking, when we're talking about the social fabric, we're talking about the society, we're talking about most people, I think you peel away a lot of the noise and the blaring lights, the visual and other forms of stimulation. And once society begins to slow down and minimize and all that, I think people are left with essentially nothing, a life devoid of any kind of meaning, and a country and a community devoid of any kind of meaning. And this is why people are resorting to these ridiculous displays where, for example, you see people like I saw in Boston, people on their porches singing, what are they singing? Lean on Me or something just as gay, something like that. They're out on their porches and all the neighbors are singing Lean on Me. And how much do you want to bet that all these neighbors coming out in solidarity have no idea what their next door neighbor's name even is? When they come out on the porch and they sing their song and they wave their hands, how much do you want to bet they don't even know any of their neighbors' names or anything about them or anything about their families and they've never talked to them before? But what that is about, what these little demonstrations, ridiculous demonstrations are about, is trying to keep the charade going. It is trying to prop up this charade. They're trying to create a network television moment, a sitcom moment, a feel-good little moment, a little kick. They're shooting up, essentially. Get another little kick, another hit of astroturfed and fake stimulation. And this is a big problem. You know, this is why I think we could get into the significance of this, why, you know, we are right and why we have answers for these problems and why this is the real crisis in the country and so on. But it's just very, we could do a whole show about that. But I just read articles like this and it's so funny to me that they want to make it about human beings needing touch and human beings needing X, Y, and Z. You don't need touch. You need God is what you need, frankly. And frankly, you can touch lots of people. You can touch your parents, you can touch your kids, if you have kids, or your siblings. There's plenty of room for intimate social functions and relationships. It's just that those people don't have them. They don't have any of that. They have drinking friends. They have no strings attached, hookup partners and relationships. They've got nothing of consequence. And I think a lot of people are realizing that. And to me, I mean, I don't know, it is sad, it is tragic in some ways, but it is a source of amusement because usually it's us that are on the receiving end of the abuse, right? If you are agitating against this system, if you are, like I do on this show, talking about the vapidness, the void that we have, what is the common refrain from the rest, from the masses? You're an incel, you need to get laid, you don't go to parties, oh, you don't have friends, and X, Y, and Z. And all these people that were so assured, all these people that they sourced their self-esteem and their value and their meaning in these relationships, the party, the show, the sex and all that, booze, bar hopping. What's going on with them now? Where are they now? I wonder, what are those people up to now when the party ends? And, you know, it's never, you can never say it enough, but this is another reminder that the party ends for all of us someday. Something to think about. And I know that might be morbid, but I don't think you can remind people enough that this idea of the party coming to an end, that is something that every one of us will experience one day, and I'm talking about death, but it may also happen in this country. The lowering of the quality of life drastically, and the country going from Western European standards of living to Brazilian standards of living, Africa standards of living. So certainly there are multiple, you know, applications for that idea. It's true in a general sense that this party's going to come to an end in terms of binging credit and binging this hyper-capitalist system and binging on, you know, neoliberalism, essentially. But I think more consequentially, it's a good reminder when these things happen that the party's all going to come to an end for every one of us. And when you look back on your life and you look ahead to the afterlife, what is that going to be? What are you going to find when you introspect? What are you going to find when you look within and you look behind? I think that is something to think about for a lot of you if maybe you're feeling that way. I don't feel that way. I feel great. I told you the other day, virtually nothing has changed for me. So, and even if it did change for me, I think I'd be fine anyway. So anyway, just wanted to point that out. I've seen several articles on Twitter today like this, and I see people freaking out, and this is so hard, and this is such a tough time. And it's like, yeah, it is. This is what happens. You don't get to live an easy life. You don't get to live a life of, and that's what people think. They think that life is supposed to be just an endless Disney World parade. And you need to be happy all the time, and you need to be partying all the time, and bright colors, and dancing, and flashing lights, and loud songs and sounds, and that's not life. And then it all comes crashing down, but hey, that's life. So anyway, but I don't mean to get too philosophical here right out of the gate, but just some passing observations about where we are. Very amusing. Very amusing to look around, especially given my situation with Charlottesville and all that. You know, the way that people have talked to me, my peers, and you see the abuse I get on Twitter, the things people say, and it's always an appeal to all of that. It's always an appeal to that lifestyle. If you're not living that lifestyle, you're not cool. You're a loser. If you're not filling up your life with this kind of distraction, and you could see why they appeal to those things. They see people that are not living that life. They see people that are not junkies, essentially. They're not addicted and a slave to these vices, a slave to the dopamine hits. I think that makes them lash out. So we all know what that is. It's very transparent, but it's funny to see it. It's funny to see it come crashing down today. And, you know, they're sort of like the proverbial junkie who is without drugs for a little while, suffering withdrawal, and at that point they do anything. You know, it's like somebody that goes from cocaine to crack, or somebody that goes from, you know, different drugs to heroin, and now they're on Zoom calls. They're on, what's that? The house party app, and they're, you know, they're singing songs on the porches. They're like, they're a junkie. They just need a little bit of a fix. They're sitting in their room drinking a bottle of wine with like New Year's Eve streamers and horns, trying to replicate the sensation, the high, get the chemicals going again. But okay, we're gonna move on and talk about coronavirus. It's a little funny, but we're gonna dive in and talk about, you know, everything that's going on. We're gonna take a look at the numbers. So our latest numbers, we have a lot of death today. The president today said that we have passed the peak, which is possible if he's talking about maybe new cases. But even then, I mean, I guess that's true. So what I mean by this is we're up to 643,726 cases in the United States. We're up to 32,290 dead. These are our totals. The death rate is 2,400 today. The death rate was 2,400 yesterday, and the death rate went up from 1,300 the day before and a previous high of 2,000 on Friday. So the president said today at the Rose Garden that we passed the peak. When it comes to the death rate, I'm not sure that we're out of the woods yet because, you know, like I just said, we saw the peak. We saw a new peak yesterday, and we're matching that peak today. So unless the death rate starts to go down tomorrow or in the coming days, I mean, maybe we're splitting hairs at this point. He means in general we've passed the peak with death. Or maybe he means that we're past the peak with new cases. We have about 29,000 new cases today. But it's been about 30,000 new cases for the past few weeks. So I'm not sure exactly what he means by that, but death is still high. New cases are still high. You know, we're still getting about 30,000 new cases per day. It's another day of 2,400 dead. And that is, you know, higher than it's ever been, except for yesterday. So the death rate continues to go up. Maybe it's stabilizing. We'll see. It's been kind of erratic lately. You know, like I said the other day, the death rate was trending down over the weekend and into Monday, and then it shot back up yesterday. It is up again today, so we're going to monitor that trend. It does seem to me that this will be the peak week in terms of the death rate, that probably after this week, the death rate will decline substantially and probably won't exceed the numbers that we're seeing today and yesterday, but we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. These are our numbers. We're going to move on and talk about our fund here for illegal immigrants. Very exciting to see this. I love to see that. I love, and I will never get tired of this, I love that I work and I have to pay thousands of dollars to the government every year. But if you come into the country illegally, you get to take thousands of dollars from the government every year. And, you know, it's nothing new. It's nothing super exciting. You understand this. It's a pretty classic frustration. But, you know, these are foreigners. These are peasants. They come from foreign countries. They break the law to get in here. And then they get just free stuff. How is this fair? Free school, healthcare, whatever. But now they get a free something else. They get a free cash payment. And this is from Fox News. It says, quote, California Governor Gavin Newsom announced on Wednesday plans to give cash payments to adult immigrants living illegally in the state to help them weather the coronavirus crisis. The plan, which would use a mix of taxpayer money and charitable donations from corporations and philanthropists, will give 150,000 adults $500 each during the coronavirus outbreak, according to the governor. California has had an estimated 2 million immigrants living in the country illegally. They have not been eligible for the $2.2 trillion stimulus package approved by Congress last month, which pledged cash payments to most Americans while boosting unemployment benefits by $600 per week. So the illegals, they don't get the $1,200 cash payment. They don't get the unemployment benefits. And that is deeply tragic. This is Newsom. He says, quote, we feel a deep sense of gratitude for people that are in fear of deportations that are still addressing essential needs of tens of millions of Californians. Said Newsom, who noted 10% of the state's workforce consisted of immigrants living in the country illegally, who paid over $2.5 billion in state and local taxes last year. And we know that they take out a lot more than they put in. That is always left out. Do we factor in how much the schooling, the healthcare, the housing, all of that costs? Of course not. Taxpayers would be kicking in $75 million for the money, while a group of charities has committed to raise another $50 million for a total of $125 million. A group of charities already has donated $5.5 million for the fund, including the Emerson Collective. I'm going to have to talk to Chris Emerson about that, see if he knows anything about what's going on there. Chris Emerson, friend of the show. Blue Shield of California Foundation, the California Endowment, the James Irvine Foundation, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and an anonymous donor. Newsom said the money will not be distributed based on income. He said, quote, their personal information will not be required to get those support. And I don't know why we allow this, honestly. It's just, it is so hard being an American. It is so hard being in the middle class because this kind of stuff is so bad. I mean, do you understand the gravity of what we're talking about here and the scope of this problem? And it goes on every day, and nothing is done about it. How do you have 2 million people living illegally in California, and probably up to 20 million or maybe more illegal immigrants living across the country? Some say it's more than 20 million. It's even higher than that, dramatically higher than that. How do you have 20 million people living in the country illegally? And it's not enough that they don't get deported. It's not enough that they don't get persecuted in any way. It's not enough that no services are denied to them. But on top of that, you've got the media, you've got charities, NGOs that are actively aiding and abetting them living in this country illegally. That is the part that I don't get. And in some ways, it's almost worse that it's not just taxpayers, but also private charities giving this money. So it's $75 million from the government and then $50 million from charity. And you would think that anybody that's helping criminals in that way would be put in jail. Should not those people be put in jail? That if these people are coming through our borders, not only are they a national security risk, but they're breaking the law. And on top of that, they're a drain on the public resources. They are taking jobs, contrary to what, you know, a lot of people might say. And in a lot of cases, they're bringing over worse crime like drugs or rape or murder. And we've seen that all across in Maryland, everywhere in the country. And you've got private charities that are helping them stay in the country illegally. Shouldn't that be the message that it's time to leave? Because all of these people came from somewhere. Don't you understand that? All the illegal immigrants living in the country immigrated here. They came here from another country. They were born in another country. That's what it means. Everybody is born in a country. Why don't we let Costa Rica, or not Costa Rica, they don't give a lot of illegals, but you know what I'm saying. Why don't we let Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Mexico, why don't we let them worry about all these people? Why don't we let them worry about the cash payments? It's their people. It's their citizens. It's their residents. Why is that on us? And, you know, it's trite to say it at this point about Americans don't need to help illegals and so on. But even when it comes to private charities, how about we don't commit a single dollar to a foreign person at all? But definitely not until every single American is taken care of, right? I mean, that much should be obvious. But I think the point that is missing on a lot of people about these conversations, because I hear rhetoric all day long about illegal immigrants and, you know, even more normie type Republicans will say this kind of stuff about sometimes they try to make it an appeal to black people. They try to make it into an appeal to the legal immigrants. Have you heard this argument before? I hear this all the time from normie type conservatives and Republicans. They say, well, and they'll go to these very liberal cities and neighborhoods and we'll say, we have, I'm thinking of one person in particular, Scott Pressler. We have this many black unemployed. We have this many black homeless youth. This many black people that are not well off. And Democrats want to give money to illegals? Or they'll say that the worst thing about illegal immigration is that it hurts legal immigrants. They'll say, well, you know, the worst thing about illegal immigration? It's that all these line cutters... Stroke moment. This is the discount Nick. This is a dollar store Nick that you get when I'm not getting paid. They say that all these line cutters and fence jumpers, the real people that they're harming are the immigrants that waited in line. That's what's really unfair too. It's not unfair to the native people. Fuck the native people. Who it's really unfair to when these people jump the border wall and they cut in line is the immigrants that bribed their way into the country. The real victims of illegal immigration are all the Chinese people that had to pay a bribe to get citizenship. Or all these Indians that had corporations smuggle them in. They lobbied Congress to give them BS visas. It is really unfair to those Indians. And it's really unfair to all the other immigrants that came in a variety of different ways, like Anchor Babies or others, right? Abuela and Abuelo who came in because their Anchor Baby got across the border, right? That's what's really unfair too. And so I hear these arguments all the time from conservatives, but you know, the angle that I don't really hear enough is that these people do not belong to us. I never hear this said, that these people do not belong to us. They have a home. Everybody wants to talk about illegal immigrants. You know, they've been here for a long time and they haven't committed crimes and they're hardworking. We hear this more from the left. But let's not forget they have a country. If they're illegal immigrants, they immigrated here. They were born in another... I mean, this is pretty asinine, simple stuff, but... And so why is that our responsibility in any way? To me, these people should be treated like not even, well, I mean, they just should not be treated in any way, shape, or form, even the same as citizens. They should be treated like escaped convicts in this country running around. And we should be building up a massive police force to get rid of every single one of them. I don't get it. Because everybody always wants to talk about our responsibility to these people. But what is the responsibility of their government? Isn't that sick that the government looks after bastards, essentially, that their government sends them over to our country and our government takes care of them? Our government doesn't take care of us. This is like the most upside down, insane way of running a country, and just frankly, immoral and unethical way to run a country that there is. Send them back to Guatemala. Better yet, put them on a ship, put them on a barge, and dump them in the ocean next to the country. Dump them in the Gulf of Mexico. Let their government rescue them from the ocean. You know, give them a parachute and kick them out of a plane or something over El Salvador or Nicaragua, wherever they come from. It is unreal, and especially in a time of crisis like this. I think actually this is a great time, actually, for us, because it's only during a time like this when people really see that clear distinction. It's only at a time like this when people really start to feel agitated about these decisions, because I can bet that there are a lot of people in this country who might not be immigration restrictionist or conservative on immigration, or conservative at all for that matter, or Republican, who maybe in normal times might be skeptical of people that are very militantly opposed to illegal immigration, but now that maybe they lost their job, or they lost their business, or they're underwater in debt, or something like that, and they see illegal immigrants getting cash payments, they see private charities and government teaming up, taxpayers and billionaires and millionaires coming together to bail these people out, I'm sure that that's going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. And so this is a little glimpse into our future. In some ways, it's actually white-pilling. On the one hand, I see this kind of stuff and it's all so tiresome. What is there to be said anymore about this that hasn't already been said about illegal immigrants and just how unacceptable it is on every level? Every dimension of it is just wrong, morally, ethically, practically. It's indefensible completely. So what more can be said about that? But to me, what is white-pilling about this is the more extreme that our beneficence or the Democrats' beneficence is towards illegal immigrants, and the worse conditions get and the less public services and money there is, the more that people start to wake up on this, the more that that fault line will become distinct and clear and hard of people that are with them or with us. And this is a big reason why I'm bullish and white-pilled about our future, because, and I've been saying this, coronavirus is a little taste of what the future of our country will be like. And I don't mean just in the sense that there'll be more diseases or that this disease will go on, but I mean that things like this will become more common. Shortages, government shutdowns, draconian government regulations or restrictions, this idea of a nanny state or a police state. We'll get a lot more of this in the future because the people that we're bringing in, like Trump famously said, they've got a lot of problems. The people that are coming in, they don't know how to live in a civilized Western country. They just don't. The kinds of things that we take for granted in this country will no longer be available to us once these people come here. And drive into a black neighborhood in a city, and you'll see what I mean. Drive into an Hispanic neighborhood in a major city and see what I mean. You go, for example, to some neighborhoods in the south side of Chicago to a convenience store or a Pizza Hut or a McDonald's, and they have to have a big glass window in front of the counter, like at a bank. You might think that might be for coronavirus or something. No, that's because people come into this place regularly and try to steal or start fights or something like this. You go to these neighborhoods and you know, they have bars in front of their windows. When a shop closes up for the night, they put in front of it a metal sheet, or they'll put up bars on the glass doors or windows so that people not smash the windows, come in and take things. This is a couple of examples. These are a couple of examples of things that we take for granted in a civilized, basically a white Christian country. And so the more the conditions deteriorate in this country because of the people that are coming, they're bringing third world behaviors, and third world behaviors will beget third world standards of living, you're going to see that public services will diminish. You'll see the government control will be needed, right? More government control than we've ever seen. You're going to see, and the word for this is quality of life, go down drastically. And when this happens, tensions will flare. When it really hits people where it counts, in their money, their safety, their health, that's when people are going to start to give a shit. Because right now, it doesn't affect us enough. Right now, if you have enough money, you can pay to avoid this stuff. You go to the McDonald's in this neighborhood and not that neighborhood. You go to the Target in this neighborhood and not the Walmart in that neighborhood, right? You take this bus or you take this way to school or to work and not that neighborhood. You pay a little bit more in property taxes so that you can live in that neighborhood and go to this school and not that other neighborhood and that school with all those people in that school. That's how it is right now. If you pay a little premium, and this is a lot of people, some people are, you know, increasingly not able to afford that because it's everywhere. But pretty soon, as this standard of living overtakes the rest of the country and becomes unavoidable and inescapable, except for the wealthiest Americans that can afford to live in gated communities and go to private schools, and we're talking thousands and rich people, the more that that happens, the more people are going to start to not like the country they're living in. Until they cannot pay to escape the country they're going to live in, they're going to be complacent. But once that happens, that's, I think, when you're going to see people are going to come around a lot more to our way of thinking. Right now, we sound like crazy. We sound like radicals and so on. It's like a fire in a nightclub or something. You know, you ever hear, and this is a good analogy from, I think, Trash Wave or some poster on Twitter. I got to give him credit because it was really good. I don't really enjoy his content so much anymore, but he made a really good thread about this not too long ago. Have you ever heard of the Station nightclub fire? This is something that happened, I think, in the early 2000s on the East Coast. It's one of the most famous nightclub fires where you had a rock concert happening in this bar / nightclub where they have live music, and they did a pyrotechnics demonstration or a pyrotechnics show where they're doing fireworks inside the bar. Now, I could get into the logistics of why this happened, but basically it started a huge fire. People didn't realize it at first. A lot of people thought it was part of the act. A lot of people didn't suspect that anything was wrong, but some people noticed. They noticed that smoke was beginning to gather, that clearly something had gone awry, and they slowly backed out of the theater. Now, once everybody realized that the whole club was going on fire, there was something inside of the ceiling, I think the insulation, that was highly flammable, so this fire spread so quickly and burned so hot. I forget what they call this, but there's a certain term that firefighters use where the air is so hot that things spontaneously combust. For whatever reason, I think it was the insulation in the ceilings, the soundproofing insulation was highly flammable. And so once that went in, the whole place just turned into like an inferno. Of course, everybody, once they see the obvious fire, once they start, you know, feeling their hair on fire and they start having, you know, parts of the ceiling rain down on them, they all rush for the exit. And what happens? Exit gets jammed. Everybody dies. Now, it's a horrible tragedy. And if you watch the video, there's a video of it. It's like, it's very tough to watch. But I never forgot that, because that is like a perfect visualization and a perfect analogy for the country. And in some ways, you can look at that as how events might play out. But I look at that in terms of how politics is going to play out and how our political positions are going to play out to a different market in 30 years. I'm not thinking about 2020. I'm thinking about 2040. I'm thinking about 2050. And just like the nightclub, we are the people that are slowly backing out. And it's not a perfect analogy, obviously. But we're the ones that are seeing this. We're the ones that are noticing that something is wrong. And we're slowly backing away. And maybe that's taking the form of asking questions or saying certain things. You know, getting kicked off YouTube and getting socially ostracized and so on. And all the party people are just enjoying the music. What are you doing, man? Everything's fine. Just chill. Get a drink. And pretty soon, all those people have their hair on fire. And all those people are, you know, stacked from the floor to the ceiling. And, you know, their skin is melting off. And I'm not trying to make light of that. But that is essentially where we're headed to. And I think that once all of that really starts to go down, and particularly with things like this, the way it will manifest is in public services, money. That's going to be the big way. People are going to start to say, hey, wait a second. I should be middle class. I make enough money. I pay a lot in taxes. Why do I live in a neighborhood that is dog shit? Why do I live in a neighborhood where it's not safe, where the schools suck, my kids get, you know, mugged in school? Why is my life like this? And on top of that, the government is paying my next door neighbor to live there. Why am I living next to Section 8? I pay a lot. These are the kinds of thoughts that will be unavoidable in the future. And a lot of these liberals can afford to be liberal. They can afford to conform to the consensus that is manufactured by the media, because it's not really hitting them yet. They're not really feeling it yet. But now with this pandemic, they're feeling it. Everyone's feeling it. And so, like I said, maybe 5 years ago, many people in California would say, right on, man, help the illegals, man. They should be a part of this. But I'm sure now you've got a lot of Californians who are seriously hurting from taxes and from litter and from drugs and all kinds of other problems, dilapidated schools and public buildings, and they're laid off or their small businesses closed, and they need help. And they see the headlines that say that Gavin Newsom is putting together a $125 million to bail out people that pay nothing, that add nothing, people that don't follow the rules, people that broke in illegally, and I'm sure they're not happy about it. So, as I said, what more can be said about illegal immigration and how indefensible it is that has not already been said? And we've talked about all the different dimensions to that conversation, and at this point, a lot of it just sounds tired and impotent, honestly. But to me, what is more interesting is that this is a little bit of a test run for what our country's going to look like. And are you excited? Do you think that when the coronavirus pandemic hits and it's in the full swing and we've got the recession and this public health emergency, do you feel better or worse about our prospects? Do you think that our message is more appealing or less appealing? In a time of crisis, you look at how people are right now and what's going through their heads. Do you think that our message is more appealing to them now than it was before or less? And to me, I think the answer is obvious, that you look at how people are talking about China or how people are talking about immigrants or even the stock market. And I'm very optimistic based on that. I think that people are really and rapidly coming around, maybe not totally to our way of thinking, but definitely leaning with this. I think nationalism is definitely ascendant during this crisis. And as I said, this is a taste of what is to come in the future. More crises, more black swan events, an overall decline in the standard of living. And so when I think about those two things, about how nationalism is appealing now and where the country is headed in the future, it's not hard to see who will inherit politics in the 21st century. And that's kind of the message at this point. So I see all this stuff. I don't like that it's happening. I don't like that injustice is happening and it is tiresome and so on. But I'm telling you, a breakthrough is coming. It really is. Trust the plan. You know, and this, maybe you don't believe me, but this is what I've been thinking about for years now. I've been thinking about this idea in particular for years. And a lot of people ask me, they say, why didn't you just infiltrate the system? Why didn't you, because I'm an advocate of this, why didn't you just infiltrate Fox News? Why didn't you get the job at Daily Wire and take the trip to Israel and work your way up the ladder? That's what a lot of people told me I should have done. And I made a very conscious decision 3 years ago based on that idea. I said, the country is going, well, there were some other considerations, but one among them was, I said, the country is going this way, and that is only going to benefit our ideology. And it's not really even a cynical or a, you know, sinister plot or anything, but it's just the writing on the wall. These problems are going to get worse, and the policies in place will exacerbate them. And there is an antidote. And so the more of a problem that you get, the more people are going to want a real solution. And not just a solution, but a diagnosis. They're going to want the diagnosis of the problem, and then they're going to want a sound and perhaps radical solution, radically different than what has been proposed in the past. So, you know, that to me, if a lot of people say, I don't know how you're so white-pilled, and I still get that. This is how. But we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about the origin of the virus, and then I guess we'll just call it a night because we don't have any super chats. Let me check and see. Oh, okay, it looks like super chats are back. Right? It looks like I got a, well, maybe not. It looks like I got a couple. Looks like I got two lemons. So maybe we'll have a couple of super chats. Okay, but in any case, we're going to talk about this. We'll see where we are at the end. And if there are, I'll read them. If not, then whatever. But I want to talk a little bit about the origin of the virus. So this is the new report, and I'll read you the report, and then we'll talk about it. This is from Fox News. It says, quote, coronavirus originated in a Wuhan laboratory, not as a bioweapon, but as part of China's effort to demonstrate that its efforts to identify and combat viruses are equal to or greater than the capabilities of the United States, according to multiple sources who have been briefed on the details of early actions by China's government and seen relevant materials. This may be, quote, the costliest government cover-up of all time, said one of the sources. The sources believe the initial transmission of the virus was bat to human, and that patient zero worked at the laboratory, then went into the population in Wuhan. Asked by Fox News John Roberts about the reporting, President Trump remarked at Wednesday's briefing, saying, quote, more and more we're hearing the story. We are doing a very thorough examination of this horrible situation. Documents detail early efforts by doctors at the lab and early efforts at containment. The Wuhan wet market, initially identified as a possible point of origin, never sold bats. And the sources tell Fox News that blaming the wet market was an effort by China to deflect blame from the laboratory, along with the country's propaganda efforts targeting the U.S. and Italy. U.S. Embassy officials warned in January 2018 about inadequate safety at the Wuhan Institute of Virology Lab and passed on information about scientists conducting risky research on coronavirus from bats, according to the Washington Post. China 100% suppressed data and changed data, according to the sources. Samples were destroyed, contaminated areas scrubbed, according to some early reports. There were doctors and journalists who were disappeared, warning of the spread of the virus and its contagious nature and human-to-human transmission. China moved quickly to shut down travel domestically from Wuhan to the rest of China, but did not stop international flights from Wuhan. Additionally, the sources tell Fox News that the World Health Organization was complicit from the beginning in helping China to cover its tracks. And so it seems like all of this is finally confirmed. And this was our worst fear, and I think maybe the most obvious assumption or speculation, which is that very clearly the virus came from a laboratory. And according to these sources, the virus came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And apparently it wasn't supposed to be a bioweapon. It was part of China's effort to demonstrate that it could identify and combat viruses and demonstrating their ability in comparison to the United States, which is kind of ironic. And it says that once that got out, that then they covered it up. They cleaned up the labs. They made up this wet market myth, right? They bought off the WHO and all the rest. And maybe the most damning thing about it is not even that it came from a laboratory or that they covered it up. But to me, the worst of it is they knew about human-to-human transmission. They knew how contagious it was, but they didn't stop their international flights. Because you could say, it was reckless or, and you know, I don't mean to minimize it. All of that is horrible. All of that is criminal. And maybe an act of war. But the worst part of it all, to me, the most harm that was done was their decision not to shut down the international flights. Because you could say that if they shut down the international flights, well, I mean, maybe this would have been a horrible scandal in China that brought China to its knees or whatever. But of course, they knew how bad it was. And so they protected their own country, but they did not protect anybody else. You might say that they deliberately left their flights going. They might have deliberately left open their airports and travel into and out of China because maybe they knew that if it was going to hurt China, they would want it to hurt everyone else as well so that there would not be an advantage by the other countries against China. And if that's the case, what is to be done about China? What is to be done about the Chinese? Chinese businesses, the Chinese government, Chinese people? Because to me, there has to be an answer for this. And there has to be an answer for this against the World Health Organization and the United Nations and against China. This cannot go without an answer. This cannot go without a response. If what they were telling us was true, and I don't think this myth even made sense on day one, but if what they were telling was was true about the wet market, that would have been bad enough. That would have been criminal negligence. But at this point, this is malicious. This is malicious, willful deceit and conspiracy. And they engaged in that conspiracy to the detriment of everybody else. Obviously, if they knew about the virus, what they should have done, and you know this, is to go to the WHO and to go to the United Nations and go to America and tell them what happened, the nature of the virus, and so on. And it wouldn't have been a good look, and maybe there would have been consequences, but it would have infected the whole world. You wouldn't have 2 million infections, 30,000 dead Americans, 10% unemployment, and it's getting higher every day. I think it's 10%. Right? And, 20% contraction in GDP. You wouldn't have had all that. So if our worst assumptions are confirmed, then what are we going to do to China? I think it's pretty obvious. We have to fix our own country first and cooperate for the time being because we're in a vulnerable position. But once we reach some degree of stabilization, we have to crush China. I think there's no other acceptable outcome here. They crippled our country. And they did that knowingly. And they did that in ways that not only hurt our economy, but hurt our people. You know, more people will have died from this than in 9/11. We went to war in Afghanistan, over 3,000 dead from a non-state actor. There should be a serious consequence for 68,000 dead from a government and from a similar level of negligence happening. So I don't know what that's going to look like, if that is hard-hitting sanctions, expulsion from supranational institutions. Maybe we just destroy these institutions, especially the World Health Organization. I don't even know what should be done at that point. But what is clear is that everything that we have been saying on this show, America First, and everything that America First people have been saying for 30 years is completely vindicated in the sense that globalization has betrayed us. Has there ever been a more clear-cut and obvious example of globalization actively betraying us than this? You could say that globalization harmed us, or maybe there were bad externalities or bad effects. But in this case, our own supranational institutions, the World Health Organization, and our own greatest trading partner, biggest exporter, two things of our creation in the last 30 years under this myth of liberal internationalism and capitalism and free markets and free trade, and they turned around and they brought this to our shores. They brought this to our neighborhoods, our schools, our workplaces, our nursing homes, and they killed us. They drew blood and they crippled our economy. And so what is to be done about this? I think anything short of completely rewriting the international order would be insufficient. And I can't wait for Trump to do that, honestly. I hope that that's done. I don't know what's going to happen after all this, but there has to be a revolution, just like I said yesterday, and not a revolution against the government for banning restaurants, but a revolution against the neoliberal elite who did this to us, a revolution in our way of thinking about the world, and a war against the UN and a war against China. Maybe not a shooting war. Maybe we don't have to go into the UN and kill everybody. But we definitely have to go to war with them so that they do not exist in the same way that they did before. Because I think about this kind of stuff and it makes my blood boil. This is what we've been saying for years. This is what globalism has done to us. That we give and we trust and we invite with open arms the people of the world. And this is what they do to us. They bring in syringes. They bring in needles full of horrible diseases. They cough on our produce, right? So if this is the origin of the virus, and we'll see in the coming days and weeks what comes of this. It sounded to me like if you saw the press conference that the president knows something that we don't, it sounds like more information is imminent, because the way he addressed this question was almost a tacit admission that it was correct, and then very quickly moved on. You know, the president said, he said about this question from Fox News, he said, well, this is one of the few times you could say there are sources. Because normally he says, well, the press makes up sources. They say, oh, an unnamed source says X, Y, and Z. And this Fox News reporter, John Roberts, said, well, sources say that the virus came from a laboratory. And Trump said, this is one of the few cases when you can say there are sources. He said, but it's a terrible thing and we're going to move on. So I think that we're going to hear more about this and maybe we'll get it confirmed. And if that's the case, just as I've been saying, I think, you know, the next thing that's going to happen is Trump is going to win re-election, but I hope that we're going to see an unchained Trump. If we had Trump in 2016 talking about China and Mexico and all the rest the way he was, imagine Trump 2020 talking about all these things and acting on all these things based on what happened now. I hope we see something like that. I don't know. I mean, it seems like he's acted very vigorously in response to this pandemic and competently, and I hope that he will continue to do this. It's a good sign. There are good signs that he's adjourning Congress and issuing cash payments with his name on it and things like that, but we need to seriously take it a step further. And I hope that when all is said and done and Trump leaves office, that the world is unrecognizable because of what we did to China and what we did to these international institutions. Because at this point, there's no excuse not to. And I think he could rally most of the country around that. And imagine the victory that that would be if we could show the media, even better, the icing on the cake is showing the media and the Democrats and even people in our own party who were telling us in January that we were xenophobic for shutting down the flights. Can you imagine that? China was knowingly infecting our country for a month, for a long time, right? And they told us that we were xenophobic or racist for trying to keep them out. What does that tell you? It tells us that xenophobia, however real it is justified. Racism, however real that was justified, honestly. Because you want to know the truth? If we were just straight up racist about it and we said, China, they're irresponsible, they don't know what they're doing, no more Chinese people in the country, it would have prevented this. And if we were all the things that they said Trump was, which is hyper-nationalist and a chauvinist and America alone and America first and xenophobic, this wouldn't have happened. So China knowingly was infecting us, and they were saying that we were the bad guys for being skeptical of them or being tough on them, for screening them. And I hope that in the same way that Trump unveiled that television at his press conference the other day, showing how the media lied about it back then, I hope he'll show the same clips next week when we find out that China knowingly did this, covered it up, and they deliberately infected our country and destroyed our economy. Because I don't think that these international institutions would ever recover from it if Trump actually made this a play and he actually pushed the issue on this. And I know a lot of people would feel the same. And suddenly, you know, Chicken Little knows what he's talking about, right? If we're going to go Zach and Cody mode, all these people who for years they told us, even Joe Biden, who said throughout this campaign, and that's going to be even better too, that's going to be the sprinkles. If the Nancy Pelosi Chinatown stuff was the icing, then Joe Biden telling us for years that China's not our enemy, they're good people, Jack. They're not our rival, we got to work together. That's just going to be the sprinkles. That's going to be the, M&Ms and everything else on top come the election, when after all is said and done with this virus, it will have been China's fault, and we'll have clips of Joe Biden saying throughout that they're actually great people, you know? So I know a lot of people are feeling the same way. China's days are numbered. The UN's days are numbered. Globalism's days are numbered, because this is affecting everybody in big ways. Not able to go to concerts. Think about that. Even Zoomers that don't give a shit about politics. It's like their concert, their graduation, birthday party, whatever. Their sports season got canceled because of China. We're going to have a whole generation of nationalists, Zoomers, and certainly there'll be a lot of converts with the millennials and everybody else as well. So I'm very excited. The only argument that they have is this hydroxychloroquine. They're grasping at straws because the media knows that if Trump went balls to the wall on this, he's got enough ammunition to finish them off for good. And I think he knows that. So hopefully he's going to take action. But anyway, that is our report here. We'll probably have more on that later this week or next week, which is why I'm not going all the way on this. So we'll see what happens with that report. And we'll take a look and see if we have any super chats. Doesn't look like we have any super chats, so it might just be the end of our show. Maybe I'll do a gaming stream. Well, why would I do that? Because I wouldn't be making any money off of that either. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do an extra stream tomorrow or the day after. We'll have to see. But it looks like no super chats. So I guess that's going to be it. I guess that's going to be it for us. I think we've got two. Ticklers has finally received my Trump bucks. Got to pay the king his taxes. Thanks for the Ninja Genie. And Johnny Bravo says Beard looks A+, and he plans to come down under not anytime soon. So those are the only two super chats that got through. It looks like nothing else is coming through. So I guess that's going to do it for us. It feels weird. That feels like such a short show, but I actually like it. I actually kind of like that. A clean one-hour show like it was always intended to be. Initially, the show was supposed to be 45 minutes of talk and 15 minutes of, super chats or audience questions, participation. That was the initial format. And over the years, since train wrecks, it got to the point where it was an hour of monologue and then like an hour and a half of super chats, which is just like crazy for me. So I guess that's going to do it for us on the show tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully super chats will be working and we'll have a normal show tomorrow. But that's going to do it for us on the show tonight. Remember to follow me on DLive, but do not subscribe. Remember to check out my website, nicholasjfuentes.com. Sign up for the email list. Remember, we are on the air Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Nicholas J. Fuentes, as always. Thanks for watching. Thanks to the two super chatters that got through, I guess. But thanks to everybody that watches the show. We love you, and I will see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.